From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan. It's Thursday, April 24th, 2025. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gonna cheese, hawa, tuxik nusum, salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. You can also join us behind the scenes in the studio on our YouTube page by going to kto.org/jpmlive or on KTOO's Instagram or Facebook pages. Today, interested in local politics? Want to run for office? Well, you can. We'll get the details on how you can learn to make it happen. Clinkett and Haida is partnering to bring the book drop tour to Southeast communities highlighting Indigenous authors. We chat with 100-plus Women Who Care, a Juno group that helps local nonprofits. And is your child ready to get started with school? We find out more about kindergarten registration from the Juno School District. Those conversations coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from Tlingit Ani and the homelands of the Occoquan. The specific area where our building sits is the ancestral home of the Clenedi, or Dog Salmon people of the Occoquan. We acknowledge those families of the Clenedi who made use of this land and waterway for thousands of years and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. Gunath Chish. You are listening to Community Support at Juno Afternoon on KTOO 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, and you can also join us on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram pages and see us live here in the studio via the video, the fandangled video system, which is kind of nice. If you think you might run for office or might work for someone who is thinking about running for office, CBJ and the League of Women Voters is offering a free workshop on May 3rd, How to Run for Local Office. And it will provide you with everything you need to know about running for an assembly or school board seat. And I've got a couple people in the studio with me now who can tell us more. I'm joined now by Kristen Bartlett, Chief of Staff for the Juno School District. Gunath Chish, Kristen, how are you today? Wasiati.
Great. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, Boston.
Of course. And Peggy Cowan, Workshop Coordinator for the League of Women Voters. Gunath Chish, Peggy, how are you today?
I am happy to be in this cozy place on the day of Juno's Day like today. Thank you.
Well, it's really nice to have you here. It's a pleasure. So let's get into it. So let's talk about this workshop. We'll start with you, Peggy. So what is this workshop?
Well, I'm with the Juno League of Women Voters, and the League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan political organization, which those are interesting paired words, but we encourage the informed and active participation of citizens in government. And we have a couple purposes, but one purpose is voter service and citizen education. And on the general level, we try to provide unbiased, nonpartisan information about elections, the voting process, and the public policy issues. And in particular, for this workshop, again, with our goals of citizen participation, we want everyone to have that is interested in serving local and the community to have an opportunity to sort of level the playing field so you don't have to be you know, historically or, you know, in the in-group or whatever, we want everyone to be able to run for office. So we partner with the Juneau School District and with the City and Borough of Juneau Clerk's Office with support from the library, and have this workshop every year before the campaign season gets going to inform people and prepare them for running for office. And we have a variety of panels, which include both current and former school board members and assembly members, and also people like treasurers for the organizations, the behind-the-scenes work, so we can help and encourage and prepare people to run.
Absolutely. That's really good. And can anybody run for local office? What are the requirements to run for local office? Or does it depend on what position you're running for?
Yeah, it depends on which position you're running for. Kristen can help me here. But basically, in Juneau for the assembly, everybody votes for everybody, but there are area-wide seats and then seats for different regions.
The districts,
and
yeah.
Districts, yeah. Yeah. And so you have to live in those districts to run for those seats, but everyone will vote for you.
And, I see.
And then you'll take it. And but you're running for that particular seat. And for the school board, there will be as background, there's three assembly seats open this that are available to run for this coming October election. And then there's three school board seats also in this coming election. No mayor's, the mayor's race is not up this time. And for the school board, you vote, you will be voting for three of the candidates, and the top three vote getters get on.
So I see. Okay. And Kristen can expound on that. So who should be – do you have to be a parent to run for school board? That's my first question.
Nope. Anyone in the community can run for school board except for school district employees. and legislators if you're a sitting legislator.
Right.
But you just have to be a qualified municipal voter to run for school board. This – workshop is hopefully, will encourage people who might not know that much about running for office or haven't been involved in a campaign before. It's hopefully help take a little bit of the mystery out of, like, how do you get started? Or maybe you know someone who you think would be a great school board member or assembly member. Encouraging other people to run, is definitely a good way to broaden our list of candidates every year. And so at this workshop, we start off by just talking about, like, what are the jobs of assembly member and school board member, and really what's the experience like. So talking to, as Peggy said, some current members of those boards helps people prepare for the role.
Yeah, because I think both of them, I know that the assembly, I don't know about the school board, maybe you can answer that. But it's not a job where you're going to make a lot of money. You're really looking at community service here. I think you get like a small honorarium every month to be
right.
on one of the board.
Yes.
But you're really looking at it as you're not going to be quitting your day job. But it's also interesting because I think in this workshop you're going to cover, too, the financial aspect. Because I think that's one thing that stops people from thinking they can do it, is because they think that they have to have the finances –
right.
to be able to run. You see it all the time in the news about, larger, elections where people are spending millions of dollars and things like that. And they're
sure.
I'm curious about that. Do you cover that aspect of it in the workshop?
Yep. The second, there'll be two panels. The first one, like I said, is talking about the role of the elected officials. And the second panel really talks about campaign basics and legal requirements. Mm. And many people who run for school board in our community don't have a large budget for their campaigns. The mayor's race can be, lots of people raise a lot of money for the mayor's race, and for assembly members, those budgets for those campaigns are a little bit larger. But For school board, typically people are raising less than $5,000, so the reporting requirements are less for the campaign disclosure. And so the treasurer's role, you know, isn't quite as complicated as when you're raising over $5,000. And, you know, a lot of the people who have run successful campaigns in our community say that the thing that they were most worried about in getting into an election was asking people for money. And the thing that they were most surprised about was that people came forward and offered to contribute to their campaigns. And that the whole asking for campaign contributions was a lot easier than they thought.
Oh, that's good.
So yeah, depending upon the office, you don't need to raise a huge amount of money. And a lot of people say it's a lot easier than they thought it was going to be.
And the other thing that's interesting about this this workshop is you also learn you may not be the one who wants to run for office, but you might have a friend that you want to help out. So you're also helping out like campaign managers or other people who want to help somebody on the campaign. And going through this workshop will give them sort of the nuts and bolts of everything, like the legal requirements and all that stuff, right?
Right.
One of the things that is always repeated every year is have a treasurer.
Yes.
Even if you are one of the small campaigns, but have somebody besides yourself that's running, keep track of the money, keep track of the APOC forms, you know, do that work so that you can focus on the issues and focus on being in touch with people and focusing on the many forums and things that you're going to go to, but that somebody's in the background helping you there. And we have Ashley Beadle, who's with L.G. Rayfeld, has been a campaign manager on lots of different campaigns and helped others, and she has it's a lot of good information to share, and she'll sort of run through the basics
of that. We're talking about the How to Run for Local Office. It is a workshop that is happening next Saturday. It goes from 8:45 in the morning to 11:30. It's at the Assembly Chambers. Pre-registration is encouraged. You can register online at JunoLWV, that's the League of Women Voters, JunoLWV.org/run. That's where you register, right, Peggy?
That is correct.
Okay.
And again, we welcome walk-ins, but if we know you're coming, we'll send you more information, you know, right before for the day with updated information. We have a large 100-page toolkit of background information, forms, information, tips, and those kind of things. Those will be available in print form to people who pre-register if they want it, and electronically to everybody. And it just helps us with our planning and with our panelists to let people know how many people are going to be there. So it's helpful to register. But again, if you get inspired and it's a rainy morning on the Saturday the 3rd and you want to come on in, then you are more than welcome to drop in.
Yeah, I know you walk away with that giant packet if you pre-register. You get all that information. You can read it at your leisure. And are there – does that cover, like, deadlines and everything, too, in terms of when you need to not register for this workshop but for actually running, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The clerk's office is on each of the panels, and they've got the nitty-gritty and the deadlines and, you know, the times and, you know, get it in before 4:30. And
right.
There's usually a little party of all the last-minute register people with their petitions, you know, at 4:30, right at the deadline.
Yeah.
But, you know, make sure you're there, you know, and those kind of things. And also can link to other state websites. So, again, the Alaska Public Offices Commission, the State Division of Elections, all of those other organizations and statewide groups have resources, and this is about running for local office, but it'll link you to the information and provide you the background you need from the statewide organizations as well.
I love that.
And speaking of links, there's also a link on the Juneau School District website. So if it's easier to remember, juneauschools.org, you can go to the block that looks like a flag and get to the site from there too.
Absolutely. Okay. Now, last question. Have either of you considered running for local office? Or are you happy organizing it?
You know, I've been happy working on the committee that organizes this workshop for the last 10 years.
Wow.
So
you're close enough, right? You're close enough.
And I've been to every school board meeting.
Of course you have.
17 years. So.
Yeah. There you go. There
yeah. You go. Fun times these days over the school board.
And I like being a behind-the-scene person to help people and get them ready and to get, you know, get them to be able to do the leadership they can. And,
But this is,
you know, sort of the ultimate, the two things is, you know, all politics is local. Well, this is the ultimate of this on both of these elected bodies. And at this time, you know, making a difference at a local level, you can do it through this, through, you know, serving, through helping someone else serve, or I like to do it by helping people run for office and be engaged.
I appreciate that. It's the How to Run for Local Office. There's 3 assembly seats and 3 school board seats up for grabs this election season. And we'll look for the League of Women Voters, always a nice partner in the fall that we do the panels here at KTOO. Yeah. So we'll look for those in the fall when we get all of the candidates ready to go. Kristen, Peggy, thank you so much. Gwyneth Cheech for coming in. Find out more at junoschools.org or at junolwv.org. Appreciate you both coming in today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Up next, we chat with folks from Tlingit and Haida about the upcoming book drop tour around Southeast highlighting Indigenous authors. This is Juno Afternoon from KTOO.
Hanson Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, we Kashuk are ye tin. Jin Katka K Jin Talk Anakaya Haanikuk, Gunnish Cheesh.
For KTOO, I'm Mike Lane. Today is Thursday, April 24th. And on this day, back in 1956, the voters of Alaska adopted a, quote, Tennessee plan to send an unofficial 3-member delegation to Congress. Ernest Greening and William Egan were named delegates to the Senate, and Ralph J. Rivers as the delegate to the House. Now you know. This is KTOO.
Wasn't born to walk in nobody else's shoes. Wasn't put here to live a life that I didn't choose. I refuse to shrink to fit all your expectations. And I refuse to accept all your limitations. And I may not be for everybody, but you can be sure that I know my worth. I've been told that I'm a creature of disbelief. Stole a few hearts, but does that make me a lifelong thief? I walk tall 'cause of all them that paved the way. And if you were smart, you would listen to what I've got to say. Well, I learned this lesson a long time ago. There are people out there who don't know. I was put on this earth to shine bright and proud. When I leave this life, my star gonna shine bright and loud. You can knock me down, but I'ma make you see.
A little witty young man, creature of disbelief. You are listening to Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Tlingit and Haida is partnering with Indian Girls Book Club for the book drop tour around Southeast. It kicks off right here in Juneau on May 15th and will visit 5 Southeast communities. And I am lucky to be joined in the studio this afternoon by Misha Jackson, Tribal Education Liaison. Gwyneth Cheesh, Wasiti, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having us.
Of course. And Tristan DuVille, Indigenous Stewardship Program Special Projects Coordinator. I remember loving that title last time you were here, Tristan. Gwyneth Cheesh for being here. Wasiti, how are you?
Doing great. Excited to talk about Book Drop.
Yeah, this is really, really cool. So let's just ask the question, what is the Book Drop? Who wants to take that?
I'll take a stab. So Book Drop is actually, it's a viral concept created by my friend, executive director of Indian Girls Book Club, Kinsale Drake, Dine poet, who I met through a bunch of different mutual friends. And they pioneered this event last year on Navajo Nation, giving away over 10,000 books for free across every village chapter house on Navajo Nation Res.
Wow. Okay. So you knew her and you said, hey, this would be great for Southeast.
Yeah. I was just itching to get her up here. I'm like, how can I get you to give away free, cool, Native authored books to Native youth in Southeast Alaska? And she, of course, has always wanted to come up to Juneau ever since I've known her. So this checked all the boxes. We're like, we can get some books into the hands of kids. We can get Kinsale exposed to Alaska, and we can hopefully continue this partnership as the years come.
Yeah, and you mentioned Indian Girls Book Club, and I just want to give the website for that in case people are interested. It's NDN, but pronounced Indian, right? NDNGirlsBookClub.org. You can find videos on there about the organization. And it started up like a little over a year ago, I think it was. And they did a big event with music and all this kind of stuff. I watched the video. You can see that on their website, I think. And very, very cool. And you can also, of course, go to ClinkettandHaida.gov. There's some other information about it on the news tab, I believe. So, Misha, where are we going with the book tour in Southeast? I know we're starting here in Juneau, right?
Yeah, we're starting here in Juneau, and then we have partnerships with four of our rural school districts through a grant with AASB. So we've been working in partnership with them for a while, and we're coordinating with them to bring Indian Girls Book Club up there. So we're going up to Klukwan, we're going up to Yakutat, we're going over to Angoon, and then we're going down to Heidelberg.
Yeah. Thank you for the directions.
Yes.
I like that. This way, that way, every
yep,
which
like
way.
Like a true Southeast girl. There
yeah,
you go.
I have the map up on our live stream here if people are tuning in on YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram. You can see this wonderful graphic which shows you everywhere they're going. And it starts on May 15th. And then if you know folks out in Angoon, that's going to be on the 18th. Yakutat's on the 20th. Klukwan is on the 22nd, and then it wraps up in Heidelberg on the 24th, and that's in May. So it starts in a couple weeks. So, Tristan, what do people need to know about, like, where will it be here in Juneau?
Yeah. Misha, I'll let you just take a stab at this one. Misha's been working with our school partners
here. Oh, great. Okay.
Through the Full Service Community Schools program.
Okay.
Yeah. So through that grant, we work with Sait Gastineau and Kuktuguhin. So those are two of our primary target goals, is reaching to our students in those schools and programs. But we're also doing some outreach on the side to make sure that we can stay true to Indian Girls Book Club's, basically the vibe that they're going to bring with them. So we're reaching out to the Juneau Public Libraries. We've reached out to our JDHS librarian. You know, we're just trying to get this grassroots group of folks here in town and across Southeast, just coming up with creative ideas and ways that we can match the pop-up ideas with local community members, artisans, just some fun different little projects we have going on. So right now we're going to be inside the schools doing some programming, and then we're going to finalize some coordination across multiple entities to see where this final one will be dropped. And that's where Tristan and our comms team comes in. So we just say, make sure to follow our posts. That's kind of how they do it. And then it'll start going viral from there.
And the best way to do that is probably like the Clinkett and Haida social medias,
yeah,
right? Like you're on Instagram, you're on Facebook, all those places. And like if you're going to have a public event, you will post about it there so people could bring their kids if they're not going to one of these two schools that might be getting this wonderful book drop in Juneau. And I know your friend, Tristan, what is her name again?
Kinsale Drake.
I know, like, when I was looking at the NDNGirlsBookClub.org website, it was really interesting because it is about getting Indigenous authors into the hands of youth, right? The younger folks. But she's also focusing on young girls as well, right? That's part of the mission. But really, it's for everyone. But it's awesome. And what kind of books will they be getting access to?
So there's actually a lot of books that are written by Native people that are for young adults. There's some like sci-fi graphic novels written by Native people. Of course, classics like Braiding Sweetgrass, the Braiding Sweetgrass for Youth. And then my friend Kinsale actually has a collection of poems that she's published that I would love to have her do readings of.
That would be cool.
Yeah, so stay tuned for that, potentially at the Men in Hull Glacier.
Oh, nice. Okay. And are the book publishers, does she work with the book publishers to get these books to be able to give them out for free? That's what I was just wondering. Or how's it being financed?
Yeah. So we work with entities. We do literal cold call and cold emails to book publishers or using Indian Girls Book Club's existing connections with publishers. Like Scholastic, for example, donated 800 books.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. And I saw in the notes that you think this is going to serve probably an estimate like over 1,100 students with all the different communities that you're going to, right?
Yeah, rough estimate.
Rough estimate, yeah. Of course. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But the big goal and the target goal is really just getting to our rural villages that don't necessarily have – they don't have bookstores. The school library is the source for them, and just trying to uplift what our villages already do. And I think that's probably what this is for us at Tlingit and Haida in the education department is just the beginning of what we're trying to do with a lot more reading initiatives, empowerment, and highlighting what our villages already do. They already do a lot of reading projects in their schools. We're just trying to come in and support them, match them, give them different ideas, and kind of start a partnership where we're able to do a lot of fun events with our CHE, our cultural heritage folks, coming in and doing some supportive programming, doing some reading mentorship programs, hopefully just building up this crew that loves reading again when we're forced to be a science of reading kind of a state. So that's kind of our bigger goal.
That's cool. So remind me again of the two schools that you're going to here in Juneau.
Sait Gastineau and Kuktuguhin.
Okay, great. And those are both elementary schools, mm-hmm. right? Okay. Yeah. So if parents are listening and they know that this is coming, they can make sure that their kid, it's on May 15th here in Juneau. So what will be happening? Will you be going into specific classrooms, or is it what do they used to call those? Assemblies? I'm trying to remember what they were called when I was in school. But will you be going into different groups, classes, or are you going to be doing like a big meeting kind of a thing?
We're trying to work with each school so that they have some autonomy and ownership in the programming that matches what their schools needs. That's kind of what the design of the larger grant that we work on is for. And so it might be partnering with their school librarians. It might be going into some of the classrooms. Kinsale and her team, we're bringing up a few of them, have done a lot of programming inside schools about zine making, poetry, being how to empower storytellers, and all kinds of different things. So they have a lot of different options that they can come in with. And I think we're really looking forward. They're really looking forward to building relationships with kids. And, it's not a charity event for them. They really want to make the connections.
It's not just about giving away books, but it's about exposure to what it is to read or create even stories, right?
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. Wow, that's amazing. That's going to be what a great event.
Yeah.
And do you – I know you're going to be – the books will be given to the children to keep, I guess. But you mentioned the libraries. Are you also helping to donate to the libraries some of the Indigenous authors that they haven't heard of or don't have in their library collection at this point?
I sure hope so. I know we have a couple ideas that we want to work with them on. We have potentially some watch parties that might happen in coordination with some of the Kuhanti book series that we do.
Oh, yeah.
I know the libraries have reached out and are willing to help in any shape or form at this point. So it might just end up being a little pop-up event, but I think we're really trying to expose them to as many different books as possible by all the Indigenous authors. I know personally, I've been collecting them for years upon years, and it has just gotten so big, and there's so many out there and so many wonderful books that it's going to be pretty exciting to show everybody all of those things that we're missing out on because we're way up here in Alaska. We've got a whole untapped resource. So I hope that we'll be able to fill some up and then they'll make connections. I'm pretty sure the Indian Girls Book Clubs already do connections with libraries and offer sending them updated books from publishers and stuff like that. So it'll be really good to link them together. And again, we're looking for sustainable partnerships. So this is just the beginning.
I love that. This is so cool. The Book Trop Tour, it's happening. It begins May 15th right here in Juneau. And it's going to visit Angoon, Yakutat, Klukwang, and Heidelberg. And it's Tlingit and Haida partnering with Indian Girls Book Club. The website there is ndngirlsbookclub.org. You can also go to tlingitandhaida.gov on their news tab. There's some information about it there. But really, follow Tlingit and Haida's social medias, right? That's really where you're going to. Maybe you'll even post some pictures from the events if we can't make it to the schools, or if your kid's not in that particular school, you might be able to find it there. But Misha Jackson, Tribal Education Liaison, and Tristan Duville, Indigenous Stewardship Program Special Projects Coordinator. I love it. Thank you so much for coming in. Is there anything else that we need to mention? Did we get it all in there?
So we've got a couple posts on Instagram. We're always looking for a little bit more amplification. So if anybody wants to check out Indian Girls Book Club on Instagram and share, and if you happen to know any big publishing houses, that would be an awesome connection that we would love to have. So
we definitely want that.
Yeah, we're always looking for some more donations to get more hands into little kids' books into little kids' hands.
So. I love that. Thank you so much for being here, Gwyneth Cheesh. I really appreciate it. Up next, we chat with 100 Women Who Care Juno, who help support Juno nonprofits. This is Juno Afternoon from KTOO. But first, a little star party.
Let's have a star party. This is Steve Kosas with the Redrake Planetarium. I'm going to talk about the Goldilocks Zone. The radius around a star where an Earth-like planet would have conditions where surface water would be possible is called the habitable zone or the Goldilocks zone. Not too warm, not too cold. Now, this radius would vary depending on the properties of the star, how hot it is and how stable it is. In our solar system with our sun, the habitable zone, Goldilocks zone, is thought to be around from the radius of Venus out to Mars. And of course, that includes the Earth, which is sandwiched between those other two planets. Now, it turns out that of the three planets, Venus, Earth, and Mars, only Earth has abundant life as we know it. Venus is incredibly hot, actually the hottest planet in the solar system, and Mars is a cold desert. So the question is, why is it only Earth that has abundant life? Well, an answer to that is that it's thought that Venus always has been a hot planet, too hot for life as we know it to exist. And Mars initially had surface water. There's evidence of that. There's canyons and lakes and rivers, the remains of that, but no current surface water. And that seems to be because Mars, it's smaller than the Earth, and it is thought that its core cooled down, which means it lost its magnetic field, which means that solar radiation was stripping the atmosphere of Mars, which means that when that happened, all the surface water was evaporated and left, leaving Mars a cold desert. And only Earth now, of the terrestrial planets in our solar system, having abundant life. This is Steve Kosas with the Marie Drake Planetarium. Our public shows are on our website at mariedrakeplanetarium.org. Thank you.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. You are listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. 100-plus women who care is a giving circle, and it is comprised of women committed to supporting Juno nonprofits, by donating $100 four times a year. That's each woman who gives $100 four times a year, and then they figure out a nonprofit that they're going to partner with or give that money to. Their next meeting is next Wednesday, April 30th, and I am joined by three of those women who care in the studio right now. Let's see. I have Michelle Hebert.
Hello.
Hello. You are all organizers in this group, as listed here. So that's, and then Julie Nielsen.
Hello.
Hi, Julie. And Tanya Mosier.
Hi.
Yeah, nice to see you.
Yes.
Gunath Cheesh, Hayadi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you all here in the studio today. And of course, if you want to learn more about this organization, you can go to 100wwcjuno.org. Okay, so I'm just going to ask the question and one of you will take it. What is 100 plus women who care?
Well, it's, as you said,
Julie.
Yes, thank you. As you said, it's a giving circle. It's part of a national movement called the 100 Who Care Alliance. Mm-hmm. And so any community can do this. And we, as you said, we meet four times a year and each donate $100 at each meeting. Mm-hmm. And so it's a great way to support local nonprofits, you know, at, in addition to, so that adds up to a lot of money, and it's about $25,000 that a nonprofit gets at each meeting.
Each meeting?
At each meeting. One of, well, so yeah, so the way it works is one of our members can sponsor, or any member can sponsor a nonprofit that they really care about. And so those all go into a hat, and at each meeting we pick out three, and then the member gets up and spends 5 minutes talking about why we should vote for them. And so then all the members vote. So one of those three will get $25,000 at each meeting. And then, so it's great. That's a lot that an organization can really do a lot with a sum of $25,000.
And they often probably don't know that it's coming, right?
Right.
That's right.
Yeah.
They know us a little bit ahead of time that their name has been drawn from the hat, and they prepare the pitch. And I could see he was doing the math on how do they get $25,000.
Yeah.
We have almost 300 members. We have 296 members that donate $100 every single time.
That's
and then
amazing.
We've had a couple matching grants and things like that. And so we do, our top person gets the $25,000, and then everything beyond that, somewhere in the $4,000 or $5,000 range, goes to our runners up. We split it. So everybody gets something, but the winner gets the big chunk of money every quarter.
So in addition to that big chunk of money that the winner gets, one of the other great things about being a member is that you get to, over time, listen and you hear all these five-minute pitches from all the nonprofits. And so we've learned about nonprofits that we never knew were even in Juno. So it's a great way to learn about what's going on in the community.
That's interesting. And Michelle, how do people become part of the group? Can anybody join?
Any women can join, yes. We have a stipulation that
so I can't join?
But you can start,
your own.
Start your own, men.
We'd love to see a matching men's one.
That's true, because you're saying the national organization is just people
yes,
who care.
Yes, so men could form a group of their own, just like we've done.
Okay, so back to you, Michelle. How do people become a member? Is it something you have to do, or can you just join?
You can just join. Like you said, on our website, 100wwcjuno.org. A little link right there. You click on it and you can join right there. And then that information comes to us. We'll add you to a member and you'll start getting emails from us. And you have to commit to donating $100 for each meeting. And
right.
You have to donate to the winner that the group has decided upon.
So if you don't agree, you still are saying I'm going to donate.
You're still going to donate, but you can actually still donate additional money to that nonprofit that
And
you
people
really
often
support.
Do that. Mm-hmm. They donate to the winner and one of the runner-ups, mm-hmm.
or both
sometimes.
Yeah.
I see. Can you tell me a couple of the last few that have maybe received this donation?
Yeah, we had last meeting we had in January, we had the Zach Gordon Youth Center. They were our top winner. We've had like Sail. We've had
Girl Scouts.
Yeah, Meals on Wheels.
Mm. Juno Animal Rescue.
Mm-hmm. Got a big one. Yeah.
We've been
Glory Hall.
We formed like 2020 So it's been 5 years of donating to, you know, nonprofits.
Yeah.
So there's 5 years. 5 times 4 is 20. So 20 nonprofits have received $25,000.
Yeah. And has the amount, how did it start? Do you know how it started, Tanya? Yeah.
I was actually there that first night. There was four women that got together and said, let's try this. And it was January of 2020, which is important to note. And, you know,
that's
in our
an interesting date.
Interesting date. And yeah. So we all showed up at the hangar, and I took over as the teacher role and was handing out, you know, name tags and getting people's agreements. Yeah, we should give a shout out to the original people. Iola Young, Jane Lindsay, Marla Berg, and Christine Crooks. And I showed up as the fifth wheel. And so we had that meeting. We had 97 women showed up the very first time. It was just a Facebook, you know, word of mouth, and 97 people, and we packed the hangar, and it was so exciting, and we still didn't even really know how we were doing all these things, you know. And we drew a name that night, and off we went. And so then, of course, COVID hit. So then we had to regroup, like, what are we going to do? So we figured out Zoom, and we started doing Zoom meetings. And then it almost doubled right away. Mm-hmm. And then it's trickled.
Steady growth.
Yeah. And we've kind of hit a little bit of a plateau. And so that's part of why we came here today, is to say, we'd love to have
people interested. Yeah. And if they're interested, they can come on Wednesday at 6:30 at the Valley Library.
It's the Valley Library. And do you meet different places, or is it pretty much the Valley Library?
Well, this is a new venue for us.
Okay.
We have been having our meetings at the Red Dog, which has been wonderful, because we need to have them hybrid so that people can still attend remotely if they'd like, and many of them do. And so we've been very grateful to have that. We struggle with the sound in the hybrid meetings, and so we thought we'd try out a new venue at the library, and hopefully the sound is better.
That you're going to be in that big room at the front of the library there. Yeah, that's a nice room. Yeah. So maybe with the Zoom, because you have the big
screen
and
stuff. Yeah, we got a big projector.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. And then, so you mentioned it a little bit, but how do, like, the members pick the organization, but can an organization, like, email you and say, hey, we'd love to be considered? Or how do, Tanya says, how does...
No, it has to be...
It has to be member-driven.
It has to be member-driven. And so it has to be an organization that somebody in our group feels strongly about and wants to promote and is willing to talk about, too. And that's another, you know, they have to get up there and give this 5-minute spiel. So next Wednesday, we'll have 3 of our actual members from our group get up and tell us about their organization and tell us why we should vote for that one. So
I see. Yeah. Okay. So you got to get to the members. Right, you got to know who they are.
Yeah.
But it's also really cool.
You could become a member.
Become a member, right. That's true. But it's also cool because you say, like, you're learning about all the different organizations in town, and then that's going to open you up to other organizations that might be sister partners to those organizations or what. So you start learning about all of the community effort that happens in the nonprofit world here in Juneau.
Yeah, we've learned a lot.
And Michelle, just talk to somebody. Tell them about
a friend, you know, was talking to me this morning about why she hasn't joined, because she has, you know, she donates to nonprofits that she, you know, believes in. But I was telling her that I do the same, but I also, what I enjoy about the 100 plus women is I get exposed to nonprofits that I have no clue about.
Right.
And they have really, you know, strong needs in our community. And so I think it's also plus a camaraderie of women getting together. And like, you know, Tanya said, 300, it's a powerful number, you know, of putting $30,000, you know, a big shot in the arm to nonprofits here in Juneau every quarter.
Yeah, that is amazing. And so, again, if you are interested, you can come to the Valley Library next Wednesday. I won't be there.
Hmm.
but you can go if you are a woman. You can go to this, and it's a wonderful. And I'm sure, like, the meeting is about that, but then I'm sure there's also, like, some snacks and camaraderie and chatting and all the things that people do at these meetings, right?
Doors will open at 6.
6, okay. Mm-hmm. And you can find out more at 100wwcjuno.org.
Yeah.
Yep.
That is the place.
And just one other thing about a member, you know, whether you want to come to the meetings in person or you want to come in Zoom or you don't want to come to a meeting at all ever, you just want to donate money and, you know, participate in this great cause. It's whatever level you want to participate. The only requirement is that you commit to donating $100 each quarter.
That is the thing. So you have to have at least $400.
Right, right. In the year.
Yeah, yeah, in the year. Yeah, excellent. Michelle Hebert, Julie Nielsen, and Tanya Mosier, thank you so much. 100-plus Women Who Care, the Juno chapter. And what's the website for the main org? Do you know off the top of your head?
Oh, you have to search for 100 Who Care Alliance.
100 Who Care Alliance. Okay, yeah. That's the term. If you're like me and you're like, hey, we should start another kind of organization.
We would love that.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Cool. So thank you so much for coming in. Gunath Cheech, I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Up next, if you've got a toddler who's ready for school, we got you covered. We talk with folks from the school district about what you need to know to get your kiddo ready for kindergarten. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. But first, a little bird note.
This is Bird Note. The sight of hundreds of vultures slowly circling overhead might seem pretty ominous. But most of the time, it just means the vultures are on their way somewhere else. In the daytime, hot air rises as the sun heats the ground. The rising column of air is called a thermal, and it's the perfect way for a turkey vulture to hitch a ride. Like an elevator to the skies, the thermal gently wafts the vultures upward. They move in a slowly ascending spiral around the thermal, rarely flapping and instead coasting on the breeze. When many vultures ride the same thermal, it's called a kettle. During raptor migration, kettles can swell with many different raptor species, like this Swainson's hawk. Hawks see the swirling vultures and join in, taking the opportunity to save their energy. The air current lifts the birds hundreds or thousands of feet in the air before petering out. Finally, the raptors leave the thermal and glide downward for miles, often far enough to take them to another thermal. Thermals make raptor migration a breeze and a spectacle for observers on the ground. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Support for Bird Note is provided by Jim and Birta Faulkner and generous listeners around the world.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com. You are listening to Community Supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at KTOO and streaming on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. I'm Boston Christopher. I am joined now by Kristen Garreau, Director of Teaching and Learning for the Juno School District.
Yes.
Gunath Cheech for being here today. I had the
Thank
wrong
you.
Microphone up. There you go. Gunath
Thank
Cheech.
You.
Okay. And then also online, we have Stacy Doof. Can you hear us, Stacy?
I sure can.
Hey,
hello,
it
Boston.
Works.
Hi, Kristen.
You're on. You're up in Anchorage right now. Are you out doing something?
Well, I'm actually in Houston, which is the Big Lake area, watching the JDHS boys soccer. So it's halftime, and we are up 6-0. So all is good from here.
Excellent.
Awesome.
Well, I'm happy to have you both here today to talk a little bit about kindergarten, because I think it's, you know, I know when I had my kid, before she was even born, it was like, where is she going to go to school?
Yes.
You start thinking about which district do I need to live in? Where do I need to move to make sure she's going to the school that I want her to go to? But so Kristen, and Stacy, you're the principal at Saik Gastineau Community School. I want to mention that. So tell us, Kristen, a little bit about, as a parent, where do I begin?
Yes. Well, you can go to the district's website, junoschools.org, and find the box there. There's a big colorful box in the middle. You can click it and go to kindergarten and see kindergarten information and registration and open houses and different things that are happening and different information that we have to share with you about having your kinder kiddo ready for school in the fall.
Okay, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And when do I need to start thinking about that?
Now is a great time if you haven't already. Last week, we did have a kindergarten registration at all of our neighborhood elementary schools. So some folks went to the schools to do the paperwork and get some things going. But we want to make sure people know that's not, if you missed it, that's okay. And we still want you to register and connect. You could go visit your neighborhood elementary school and just fill out paperwork. We're also going to be at the Early Learning Fair, which is tomorrow, at the Field House.
And yeah, we'll Diamond Field. They were on the show yesterday. Diamond Field House from 4:30 to 6:30, I think.
Yes, yes. So we'll have things there. To register for kindergarten, if you're not already in the district in some other kind of pre-K program, if you're brand new to the Juneau School District, you just need to fill out some paperwork and have your birth certificate and shot records, and we can get it all squared away.
I see. Okay. But Stacy, I want to ask you, I love that you're in Houston, by the way. That's awesome. But how do I prepare myself as a parent mentally for this new journey that I'm about to take with my child?
Yeah, thanks, Boston. That's a great question. I think there are a number of ways you can prepare yourself and your child for kindergarten. One would just be to make sure you have a really established bedtime routine that hopefully includes reading to your kid at night. But one of the big factors of starting that school schedule is school starts at 8 a.m., so making sure that your kid gets a good night's sleep. And so establishing that good bedtime routine, and then I'd say starting to talk to your child about kindergarten, where they're going to go, drive by the school, go to the playground, and really just start talking up how exciting school is. They're going to meet new friends and new adults, and really just putting aside any fear you might have as a parent about kindergarten and talking it up with your child.
I see. And Kristen, that idea of getting on a regular schedule, because as a 3 and 4 year old, it may be wackadoodle, right? Just in terms of time.
Yes, that schedule is really important, especially as we move through the summer and get closer to August. School is not going to start till toward the end of August for the kindergarten students, and so you've got some time to establish those and get on that routine in the fall and be ready for that. But yeah, that's really important, and kids need their sleep, and so getting into that routine is really critical.
Yeah. And do you do anything at the school, Stacy, when like those kiddos are first coming in? Like, what's the first day of kindergarten look like?
Well, that's a great question. It is a gentle start, I'd say. So we generally welcome parents in the commons at our school, and I think most schools do this. Kindergartners are welcomed in the commons, whereas everybody else sort of enters from recess out into the school. We gather in the commons. We do a meet and greet with parents. And even prior to the first day of school, all of the schools do a meet and greet with kids and parents, where we ask the parents a few questions about their child, and the kindergarten teachers spend some time with the kids, having them count, having them color, having them just chat a little bit with the teacher. And then after that, the first day of school comes, we greet parents and kiddos in the commons. We all walk together into the classrooms, and parents really can do, a short or long goodbye, whatever sort of works for them. And then generally we have a gathering out in the commons for parents afterwards, where we may offer them, some tea or coffee and donuts, and just a gentle entry into school for them as a parent.
Absolutely. Yeah, go ahead, Kristen.
I was going to say, sometimes it's harder for the parents than the kindergartners.
That's what I'm saying,
right? The first day of school is really hard, especially when it's your first one or maybe your last one. And so that transition is sometimes really hard for our parents. And so we want to love on them as much as we love on their kids and provide them that, like, come hang out with us for after you said goodbye, and then come and, spend a little time.
Yeah, I'm imagining go ahead, Stacy.
Oh, I was going to say there's always a couple parents where the kid's like, see you later, mom, or dad, or grandma and grandpa. And the parent doesn't really, or caregiver doesn't really know what to do, because they're expecting this teary goodbye, and they're teary, and the kid's already down the hall in the classroom playing with new friends. So it can definitely be a harder transition for parents than it is for children.
Yeah, because in my brain, I'm imagining like those first-time parents, right? I didn't even think about maybe if it's your last kid that's going up in kindergarten because then they're not going to be at home anymore. But like those first parents. But I'm sure like those who have a second or third, it's like, whatever, kindergarten, get out there, kid, leave me alone.
Because a lot of it is that the unknown, right? For the adults, as the same as for the kids. So just having... being there and seeing what's happening and seeing that your child is going off and engaging and having fun and getting to know new kids. And
well, like you said, you can visit the classes. You can come in a little bit early. You can kind of see what's going on. You're getting in the spring here. If you get to, you can go to the school and sort of check it out. And if your kiddo is a little apprehensive, maybe like even doing that, getting that routine in there of like going to the school and knowing that you're going to be.
Yep. Especially if you live close enough. So maybe you're walking to school.
Right.
You could start that routine and do that all, you know, throughout the summer too.
Yeah. But the bedtime routine thing is pretty valuable.
Yes.
So again, I want to make sure we get the details here of, I need to have the birth certificate and I need to have, what else do I need to have?
We need your immunization records, but we can, you can also give us permission to access that through this, our health team can access that online if you give us permission. So you don't have to have the actual physical of that, but we do need your birth certificate, the birth certificate so that we can get that paperwork. And then you can stop by any neighborhood school and fill it out. You can find the registration paperwork online and print it off if you want, fill it out, or come by and we can give you paper copies to fill out.
And is this for all the Juneau School District school? Because I know there's some programs that are separate from like the Gastineau School. There are specific programs at Gastineau too, but like there's some other optional programs. Are there optional kindergarten programs too?
All of our optional programs have kindergarten. And so that's, we're going to hit go on that lottery next week.
Okay.
And so people will start getting notifications about that starting next week if they've applied for an optional program. And then they would submit their paperwork to that optional program if they get accepted. But if they are on a wait list, they can send that paperwork in and drop it off at any school. And once schools are closed for the summer, they can drop off registration and or come do registration paperwork at the district offices in the Thunder Mountain building all summer long.
Okay, that's great. And if you want to learn more about all the different options, you can go to junoschools.org because there's different programs. You have to be part of a lottery, so it's probably too late for next year if you haven't already gotten your name in there for that,
you
but maybe
still,
not.
They're closed at the moment, but they'll hit run next week, and then after about another week, they'll reopen for additional applicants.
Okay, that sounds great. Yeah. What a great time. It must be fun for you as educators to have a whole new group of kids coming in, right, Stacy?
Yep, we're really excited. We had quite a good turnout for our kindergarten registration last week, and we had two sets of twins, which was pretty exciting, but it's always just great to meet new families and kiddos and give them a tour of the school and give them a little glimpse of what school will be like.
Excellent. Well, you can find out more at junoschools.org. Kristen Gross, Stacy Doof, thank you so much, Gwyneth Cheese, for coming in and getting us primed for kindergarten.
Thank you.
All right.
Really
thanks, Boston.
That.
See you guys later.
Bye. Bye-bye. Got to do the outro, everybody. That'll do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, the drama department, we're going to high school. They perform the musical Anastasia this weekend, plus updates from the Juno Library and the Parks and Recreation Department. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Programming support comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49, Hanson Gress, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gwyneth Cheese, and have a joyous Juno evening.
You're listening to KTOO 104.3 Juno and KAUK 91.7 Juno Auk Bay.